Welcome back to Children of the 80s. I am Lindsay, and with me today is my co-host who never quite had the hair to pull off a good power ballad in the 80s, Jim Butler.
Most of their power in the power ballad came from the hair.
Yep, and you just...
And therefore, I was a crew cut type guy.
Yeah, you've got a luscious head of locks, but just baby fine.
I realized as I got into my 40s and closer to 50s that the more I kept it near flat top level, the more bald I looked. And so therefore, I've let it start growing out because not all 50-year-old men have this much hair.
Oh, yeah, you got a head full.
And so I may as well just leave it going there.
Here's what I worry about, though. Whenever you're on the phone or you're dealing with a stressful situation, you pull on your hair.
I do. I look like Doc Brown at the end of the phone call.
And then you do. But when you let it get long and you pull on your hair, it's like a foot sticking straight up.
It's shaped like a foot.
I knew you were going to say that. It's a foot in length sticking straight up.
Well, you know what they say. People that have hair, they don't know what they got till it's gone.
Yes, that's right. So,
and I never want to say goodbye to my hair.
Oh my gosh. I think we might be giving some hints here on what today's episode is about. But you're still getting over the flu. I had worried at some point yesterday that I was going to have to do this episode on my own.
Never.
And I was going to have to call in a backup to like pinch hit for you because I don't know that I'm that talented.
You could pull it off solo, but it's always good to call in a backup. And we've got plenty of backup friends now that you could call.
Here's the thing, though. I talk all the time to you and you don't listen. So it would be very similar, wouldn't it?
Yeah, if they didn't listen, you'd actually probably get your other co-host to actually listen to
yes,
you.
Yes, yes. Right. So, but I don't know quite how single host podcasts do it. I mean, I admire them, but I need somebody to give me some feedback.
Yeah, I agree. I don't know how they do it either. It's a talent that I don't think that I have. But if you can do a solo hosted podcast and make it interesting, then that is talent right there.
So I had an idea for a brand new podcast that I wanted to do, and I couldn't get you on board to do it with me. So I got pissy. Can I say that on a podcast? I got pissy and said I was going to do it on my own. And I recorded the first episode, and it was horrible.
Oh, you did? I didn't know this.
And then put that thing to
did
bed
you
real
did you
quick.
Hide this from me?
Oh yeah.
Put I can't even keep up with quick. The podcast that we do have. There's no way you're talking me into another one.
I know.
Unless we're gonna win the lottery and I don't have to work and then I can devote all my time to podcasts. That's the only way it's gonna work out. That's the only way I'm adding a third. I can't even get through the second right now
because I know.
I've been sick.
We've had to put a pause on the Friends podcast until we can get you back 100%. So,
well, speaking of being sick, you've kind of started to pull the load lately, which I appreciate and I'm thankful for. But there was one night where I said, hey, listen, you've been going at it pretty hard. Don't come home and cook dinner. Why don't you just stop by and grab a pizza? And I haven't really had bread since the first of the year. I can count on two fingers how many times I've had bread since the first of the year. And so I said,
well, we're only a month in. Well, I mean, don't.
But still,
don't,
2 days out of a month for a guy who loves his bread.
Yeah.
So I said, get pizza. You get you the regular pizza. Get me the cauliflower pizza.
Yeah.
And we'll go from there. Here's what I'm about to get on a rant on right now, okay? So I apologize for this rant.
Oh, geez.
But lately, I've noticed whenever pizza is picked up from the pizza place, I come home and I have to recut it because they barely roll their rollers through it. They make a little mark on top and they go as fast as they can. They don't actually cut the pizza. They just roll their little thing through it. Nothing gets cut. Then I got to come home and hack it up as if I'm wearing a hockey mask to try and get a slice of pizza, and it's very irritating. So pizza people, if you're out there listening, I know you're in a hurry. I know you're making dozens of pizzas every 15 minutes. I get that. Just give it a little bit more elbow grease when you roll through with your little cutter there.
You know we're old when we're ranting and raving about our pizza not being cut.
I got all kinds of them coming up.
So I got something. I mean, we've showed our cards that we're at this point in our lives. We went to Costco recently, and I guess because it was the first of the year, they had a lot of vitamins and stuff that at a good price. So we were just like perusing the vitamin aisle, just like picking up stuff we would never normally buy. You got me some magnesium gummies.
Yes. And they've changed your life.
It has changed my life to the point I'm wondering what kind of gummies these really are.
They are not HTC or...
You're doling them out to me. I mean, I need to maybe look at that bottle a little bit closer. I am sleeping like a baby and I wake up feeling refreshed. I haven't felt that way in 30 years. I sleep a lot and I love to sleep, but the thought is I never really get into that REM sleep. My sleep study showed that.
Stand in the place where you live.
So seriously, run. Don't walk. And get your magnesium gummies or whatever else kind of gummies you think you might need.
This portion of the podcast is brought to you by the old folks.
Oh, man.
We're the get off my lawn people and the here. These are the supplements that you should be taking because you're lacking them now that you're old people.
Next thing you know, we'll be talking about like laxatives or something. Oh, yeah.
So, you know, our buddies, Rob and Dave, we had them on the show. They were on the show actually last week.
Yeah.
Rob started out his podcast either the day before or the next week that said he was drinking a V8 and he was reading the ingredients on the back of the V8. And I was, this is how you know you're old. You're not only drinking V8, but you're reading the back of it. And then you know you're older when you're a listener and you go, huh, I didn't know that the V8 had watercress in it. Yeah.
So we're pausing on our 80s TV theme song series.
We're pausing this week because this Friday is Valentine's Day. And to celebrate Valentine's Day, this is an episode you wanted to do last year. And I punked you into doing duets rather than power ballads. But today we are counting down our top 7 power ballads each. So we're going to have a total of 14 songs in there. This might be the best crop of music in one episode that we've ever had.
That's what you told me.
What do you think of when you hear power ballads?
Big hair.
Big hair. Okay. Yeah. Late 80s, big hair, yeah. That kind of thing.
Eyeliner.
But there were certainly power ballads in the 70s. No?
I know, but that's not what comes to my mind right out of the gate.
Can you think of a few power ballads from the 70s?
I know Aerosmith had to have done one.
Oh, well, they 70s. Did. They had Dream On, one of the most famous, one of the but original.
Is that a power ballad?
It is a power ballad.
To me, a power ballad has to be singing about a relationship. Is no, that about does, a relationship?
No, it doesn't have to be singing
yes,
about
it does.
A relationship. No, it does not. A it's power either... ballad is a power ballad. It is a slow song with power chords and power guitar, but it doesn't and have love. To be about a relationship.
It can be falling in love, falling out of love, getting together, falling apart.
You couldn't be more wrong.
Wrong.
Wrong. So, Dream On is a power ballad.
Love, from the 70s?
Love Hurts by Nazareth.
Nazareth, yes.
Is a power ballad. Beth by Kiss is a power ballad. Now, are those songs about love? Yes, they are. But a power ballad doesn't have to be about love. Do you consider Sister Christian a power ballad?
No, that's why it didn't make my list.
It and made your honorable mention.
I know, but that's why it didn't make the full-blown list.
It's a power ballad. We're going to Twitterverse, hit us up. What do you consider a power ballad? Does it have to be about love?
Yes.
It does not. All right. So do you want to go through and mention some of your honorable mentions that didn't quite make your top 7?
Okay. Well, Sister Christian, we've just mentioned by Night Ranger, yeah. Early
80s. 1984.
I've talked before about how much I love this song. I wavered on it. I wasn't sure. And the reason why, I knew it wasn't like a love song. And so that's why it didn't make my list.
Let me ask you something. Is Just an Old Fashioned Love Song by Three Dog Night, is that a power ballad?
No.
You're right. It's not. Okay. But it is a love song.
And I also struggled with this one. You're the Inspiration, Chicago. Same year as Sister Christian, 1984. I love me some Chicago, and I love You're the Inspiration. So probably I have to pick Look Away is my favorite Chicago song, but You're the Inspiration is just right up there next to it. And I asked you when we were doing our list, I'm like, is Chicago capable of doing a power ballad? I didn't know.
All Chicago did in the 80s was ballads.
Ballads, but power? I don't know.
I don't know.
Okay, what you got?
I've got Never Say Goodbye by Bon Jovi, yep. 1987.
Yep.
I've got, going back to some of the early 80s, Faithfully by Journey, 1983. How about These Dreams by Heart?
Well, no doubt everything Heart does is power.
Yes. And that is a power ballad. But I'm saving that one for when we do our songs about sleep, and or we do our episode about sleep and dreams and, well, and maybe, everything else.
Maybe I should have saved my magnesium story for that episode. Yeah,
you probably should have. And how about this one from 1989, When I See You Smile by Bad English?
Our wedding song.
It is. And it's a fantastic song.
I love it.
All right. So are you ready to get to the countdown? You want to bounce back and forth? You do your number seven. I do my number seven, and then so on and so forth.
Yeah, let's do it.
All right. First up.
Starship. Sarah. Is it Sarah with an H or Sarah without an H?
No
H. Debuted in the top 40 on January 18th, 1986. It was on the charts for 13 weeks. It peaked at number one on Billboard Hot 100, also hit number one in sales and airplay. It landed at number 24 Song of the Year, 1986. Let me tell you a little personal story that I have about this song.
Let me hear about it.
I had a little brown, hard, chunky plastic Fisher-Price tape recorder when I was little. Can you picture one of those?
I remember those. Yeah, okay. I remember them.
And somehow I got my hands on a blank cassette. And, you know, my aunt lived with us when she was in college, and I knew that if Aunt Renee was in her room with her door shut, I couldn't bother her because my favorite thing to do was to bug her.
Yes.
So I would oftentimes stand outside her bedroom door with my ear to the door and listen to see what was going on in there. So I was also very dangerous with my Fisher-Price tape recorder because I would tape conversations, not tell people.
Like the White House Watergate. Scandal.
So she was listening to the radio, to a tape, I don't know. And I was outside of her bedroom listening in, and it was Sarah, Starship Sarah came on, and I hit record, and I recorded just a piece of the song before I got caught. I think my mom probably came along and caught me. But I would then listen to that little snippet.
To that little piece?
Of Sarah over and over and over again. I think it was my first attempt at a mixtape. Was a little blip of Sarah. And I've loved the song ever since. To me, nothing takes me back to the 80s more than that song.
Yeah, good song. It was also hit number one on the Adult Contemporary chart for 3 weeks. So it actually landed on that chart number one than it did on the Billboard Hot 100.
Are
as
you
well.
Going to tell me this is a yacht rock song? I'm getting nervous
it's
now.
It's not a yacht rock song. Adult Contemporary isn't a yacht rock.
Huh.
Chart, although Yacht Rock would hit the Adult Contemporary chart. My personal story for this song. So when I first moved down here, I worked for my uncle, and then that company ended up going out of business. And so I got another job through a friend who brought me into this department with this lady named Sarah, who was married at the time to my best friend, Jason, who will be on the podcast here in a few weeks. And I remember we worked in the same department, and then our buddy Bob, who will also be on the podcast coming up soon to talk Van Halen, anytime he would come over, he'd say something to Sarah, and then he would say, "There's a storm brewing in your eyes, Sarah." So that's what this always reminds me of. Yes, she got it.
She got the reference.
Yes, she got it. Yes. So that's what this song always reminds me of. It doesn't necessarily remind me of the 80s. It reminds me of the early 2000s. Okay, so are you ready for my number seven?
Yep.
I want you to show me That is I Want to Know What Love Is by Foreigner. It debuted in the top 40 on December 15th, 1984, one day before my 11th birthday. It was on the chart for 16 weeks. It peaked at number one on the Billboard Hot 100 for 2 weeks. It was also number one in airplay for 2 weeks and number one on the sales chart. Hit number one on the mainstream rock chart, as well as number one in 7 different countries. It was the number 4 song of the year in 1985.
I wonder what the other 3 songs
were. What the top 3 songs?
Because I have a hard time believing there's anything better than this song in 1985.
I'm pretty sure that Wake Me Up Before You Go-Go was number 3 in 1985.
Okay. Okay, well, that's a good song. But boy, I mean, speaking of power.
That is some power ballad. Yep. That is Lou Gramm at his most powerful.
Totally. Absolutely.
So what do you love about that song?
I just remember Little Lynn's just throwing her head back and singing this song. Little Lynn's wanted to know what love was. She didn't get it, but she wanted to. She wanted a little boyfriend to hold hands with.
So you wanted to know the top 100 or the top 4 songs of 1985.
Yes.
Careless Whisper by Wham.
Not better than this.
Like a Virgin, Madonna. Ugh. Wake Me Up Before You Go-Go, Wham. And then I Want to Know What Love Is.
I mean,
Foreigner.
Okay.
Remember when we talked about the Grammys and Chaka Khan won for I Feel For You? Chaka. That was the number 5 song of
the Really?
Year. Yes.
Oh, wow.
So, yeah, this song just takes me back to the early to mid 80s. Just a good power ballad.
Right. Little Jim wanted to know what love was, too.
Foreigner was a huge band in the late 70s and early 80s. And then they started really doing kind of more of these power ballads, which started getting them their number ones. But yeah, I mean, I don't have any specific memories other than the song being on the radio all the time in 1985. And me digging it. All right. Anything else on I Want to Know What Love Is before we move on to your number 6?
I think that's it.
All right. Here we go. Number 6.
We could fly. Because we all have wings. But some of us don't know why. I was standing. You were there.
I love how it goes silent here and then comes back.
I don't want to talk on top off.
And then listen to the saxophone. Is that not phenomenal? Go ahead, give us the deets.
I don't want to. I don't want to talk on top of it. Okay. Never Tear Us Apart in Excess. Debuted in the top 40 on September 17th, 1988, where it sat on the chart for 11 weeks. It peaked at number 7 on the Billboard Hot 100, and it is the number 95th song of the year for 1988. What in the bleepity bleep was 1988 thinking to make that only the 95th song?
I mean, it only peaked at number 7, so it didn't get to number 1, but it's certainly, I would have trouble picking 94 songs in 1988 that are better than Never Tear Us Apart by NXS.
I'm going to say something that might be controversial. This is one of the best songs ever written.
It is a fantastic song. You know what? I think I've got a reason why it was only number 95 in 1988.
Okay, what?
It debuted in the top 40 on September 17th, 1988. So it debuted late in the year. Okay. So it probably didn't get its full run.
That makes me feel a little bit better. Unfortunately, I didn't know anything about NXS until I met you. And I learned about NXS because there was that reality show that you really enjoyed.
Yes, Rockstar NXS. That was awesome.
And then from there, I kind of branched out and started listening to some of their songs. So I don't really have any really deep thoughts or memories of this other than I swear this is one of the best songs ever written.
So I liked NXS in the 80s, but I didn't like love them. They had a different sound. They're from Australia. It was kind of like dance rock.
Yep.
with obviously with this power ballad here and another power ballad, but their album Kick is a huge album. I think it had like seven top 20 hits on it or seven top 10 hits on it. Just a humongous album. But when I really started to fall in love with NXS was when they were looking for a replacement singer for Michael Hutchins and they did their American Idol type rock star NXS. And so I got to hear all of their music again. J.D. Fortune ended up winning that. Andrew Ferris had written a song with just music. And they put all the contestants in teams to write lyrics for this song. And J.D. Fortune was with a group and he was like, the lyrics that you guys are writing sucks. And he went off on his own. And wrote lyrics. And he caught a lot of flack for that. And the NXS band members were like, listen, you sound like you can't work with a group, right? Yeah. That you've got to do everything on your own. And that's not good. And he was like, listen, I can work with a group, but the lyrics they were writing were shit. And he was like, I am not putting up with it. And so he was like, this is what I wrote, like it or not. And guess what? That was NXS's last top 40 hit.
No way. Yes,
the lyrics to the song so he wrote.
Did he win?
He won.
Okay, that's pretty cool.
And I don't think they lasted too long, but he went on tour with them. But that's what I think of when I hear NXS. All right, so now it is time for my number six song. Let's see if you recognize this. That is The Search Is Over by Survivor, or who I like to call Journey Light. Jimmy Jameson, the lead singer, I like to call Steve Perry Light. This debuted in the top 40 on May 11th, 1985. It was on the chart for 14 weeks. It peaked at number four on the Billboard Hot 100, but it was number one on the Adult Contemporary chart for 4 weeks. It was the number 48 song of the year in 1985. And I'm telling you, in the mid-80s, to me, there was nothing like Survivor. Survivor with Eye of the Tiger, with Burning Heart, with The Search Is Over, one of the great power ballads of the 80s. I love me some Survivor.
So it's ironic that Survivor did Eye of the Tiger, which is one of my least favorite
80s songs by them.
Songs, 80s songs.
Period.
Period.
Wow.
And then they also did The Search Is Over, one of my favorite songs.
So this is not Survivor's first appearance on our show. We had them on our Feel Good Songs where they came in with me for I Can't Hold Back, which is probably my favorite Survivor song, but this is pretty close to being number two.
Yeah, that's a good one as well.
I also have High On You, which I know you love.
Yep.
Burning Heart from Rocky IV. Eye of the Tiger from Rocky III, which apparently you hate. I didn't know anybody hated that song, so that's a little weird. But yeah, 1985 was just a great year for power ballads with Foreigner, I Want to Know What Love Is, and then Survivor, The Search Is Over.
Okay.
Any other thoughts on Survivor before we move on?
I
don't think
I
got
anything else. I mean, the Survivor, they survived.
All right, let's fast forward a couple of years to get to year number five. Go ahead.
Nope.
That is Angel by Aerosmith.
You can't steal my thunder.
I'm going to steal your thunder. You can't. It's we can't play 3.5 minutes of the song without you talking. We're going to get sued.
This deserves it. Okay. Angel by Aerosmith debuted in the top 40 on February 27th, 1988. It was on the charts for 15 weeks. It peaked at number 3 on the Billboard Hot 100. It was the number 34th song of the year in 1988.
This was their follow-up to Dude Looks Like a Lady, which is really the album that started Aerosmith's comeback. Well, I would say that what started their comeback was their run with Run DMC.
Yes, absolutely.
But, you know, Dude Looks Like a Lady was their first hit, and then Angel was their second hit, and this was a lot different than anything that the 70s Aerosmith had put out.
Absolutely. So I didn't know anything about this song until the early 2000s. I was in college, and I had a very pivotal conversation with a gentleman that I liked. And after the conversation ended, I realized that in the background, because we were in a car, in the background, Aerosmith's Jaded had been playing. And I thought that was a sign.
What does Jaded have to do with Angel?
So I went out and bought Aerosmith's Greatest Hits for that reason, and I fell in love with Angel.
Oh, wow. So I knew Angel from when it debuted in the top 40 on February 27th, 1988, probably before that. They played it on our local radio station all the time. I would lay in bed at night listening to this song on the Hot 9 at 9. Love this song. This was not like anything, like I said, that anything that Aerosmith had done before. But I remember Joe Perry not really being happy about this. Steven Tyler was the songwriter, right? Mm-hmm. He kind of liked the power ballads. Joe Perry was not happy about this because he thought they were getting away from being Aerosmith.
They were a little bit on this one.
Until he saw these big tough dudes in their concert in leather jackets going, "Angel, man, yeah, I love this," and singing along with it. And Joe Perry was like, "Okay, maybe we're on to something here."
I mean, he's not wrong, but I can't really even put into words what it is. It's the tune itself. I think they could almost be singing anything.
But right.
The tune itself just like gets me every time.
"You're my angel, come and save me tonight." That is, I don't know if it's poetry, but it's a power ballad, okay, for sure.
So here's what I think. We bought you this little board, and now you think you're Wolfman Jack.
I am. There. I'm Wolfman. Ow! Here we go. Jim's number 5. "We think a lot, but don't talk much about it till things get out of control. Oh, how do I know when it's love? I can't tell you, but it'll last forever. Oh, how does it feel when it's love? It's just something you feel together. We're so..." Okay, we can't listen so
to it
that
forever.
Is, I don't listen to it for 6.5 minutes like you do. I start talking at the appropriate time. That is "When It's Love" by Van Halen. This is the song that made me fall in love with Van Hagar. Sammy's got just such a unique voice, mm-hmm. and he's got a better voice than David Lee Roth. And I know people are going to hate me for that, but he does. He's got a better voice, and the music was more melodic with Van Hagar than it was with Van Halen. Now, David Lee Roth writes better lyrics, and he's certainly a better frontman, and I like both versions of Van Halen. But this song debuted in the top 40 on July 23rd, 1988. This was the summer before my freshman year, so I remember walking around, hanging out with my best friend. If we weren't playing sports, we were just walking around looking for stuff to do, and this song always being on the radio. This was on the chart for 12 weeks. It peaked at number 5 on the Billboard Hot 100, but get this, it was number 1 on another chart. Do you want to guess what chart it is? Do you think it was the Adult Contemporary chart?
I think it might have been.
It was not.
What?
It was number 1 on the mainstream rock chart.
Oh, okay.
It's the number 82 song of the year in 1988. And like I said, this is the song that made me fall in love with Van Hagar, even though they had hits before this. This was it for me. So love this song right before freshman year. How do you know when it's love? Sammy can't tell you, but he can tell you that it lasts forever.
Do you think Sammy's love lasted forever? I feel like he's probably been through 5 wives.
That doesn't mean that he doesn't love each one of them forever.
I know very little about Van Halen. I don't feel like I can add anything to this conversation. I think it's a great song. We are going to have Bob on with us very soon to break down all things Van Halen. I will somewhat take a background to that episode. Maybe you'll let me run your little board over there.
You're not getting to run the board, but what you can do is ask questions. You can ask follow-up questions. You're really good at that.
Do that really well. So I've got nothing to say, but I think it's a good choice.
You like the song.
I like the song. Yeah. So you know my songs, but I don't know your songs.
Yes.
And I'm surprised I haven't seen a Bon Jovi song yet.
I mentioned Bon Jovi in the honorable mentions when I said never say goodbye.
I guess I thought that I would see them at some point.
Maybe you still will.
Maybe I will.
Maybe you won't.
Okay, we'll see.
All right, so how do you know when it's love? Well, Sammy can tell you he doesn't know, but it lasts forever. But I think this next group can tell us something a little bit about it.
It Must Have Been Love by Roxette. Love Roxette.
I love me some Roxette.
Okay, so this song debuted in the top 40 on April 21st. What do we call it?
1980.
1990. So when I gave you my list, you were like, no, you can't do It Must Have Been Love by Roxette. This song came out in 1990. I said, ah, contraire. It was originally released in December of 1987.
What?
Therefore, it makes the list.
What? I did not know that.
Yeah.
That's news to me.
It was first released, and it Must Have Been Love, parentheses, Christmas for the Brokenhearted.
Okay, that's a little strange.
Then turned around, took the Christmas part out and released it again in 80/10. So this version sat on the chart for 17 weeks. It peaked at number one on Billboard Hot 100, where it stayed for 2 weeks. It was number one in 7 other countries, and it was the number two song of the year in 1990.
I did not know that it was the number two song of the year in 1990. That's pretty good. That's pretty good company it keeps there, because 1990 was an excellent year for music.
It sure was.
Yeah, I love this song. I love everything Roxette, so, you know, that shouldn't be a surprise. This was re-released because of the movie Pretty Woman.
Yeah.
Right? So it was in, was it in the credits of Pretty Woman, or was it during the movie? I don't know.
I can't remember.
Not really a movie that I've watched multiple times. All right, is that all you have on your Roxette?
So one of the reasons why I love Roxette is I feel like women are kind of underrepresented through much of the 80s. I know you're looking at me and you're like Cyndi Lauper, Madonna,
Whitney Houston.
What's wrong with
Janet
you?
Janet Jackson.
I just feel like they were underrepresented.
Actually, the reason why I'm looking at you is because Roxette is not a woman group. It is a duet.
I know, but one of them is female.
It is a duo.
Yes. They don't both have to be female.
Okay.
It's fine if they are, but they don't have to be.
So the reason why you picked Roxette is not because you love the song, but because you felt like you had to represent women.
No, I love the song, but I love that Roxette, that one of the two is female.
Okay. I love that one of the two is female and one of the two is male. They made beautiful music together.
Ew, gross.
All right. My number four, we're heading back again. Once again, we're heading back to 1985. Apparently, I thought 1988 would have been the year of the power ballad. Apparently, 1985 mm-hmm. is the year of the great power ballad. That is Can't Fight This Feeling, REO Speedwagon. It debuted in the top 40 on January 26, 1985. It was on the chart for 14 weeks. It peaked at number one on the Billboard Hot 100 for 3 weeks and was also number one on the Airplay for 3 weeks and sales chart for 2 weeks. It is the number 13 song of 1985. And when you talk about songs where friends become lovers, you talk about Can't Fight This Feeling by R.S. Speedwagon and The Search Is Over by Survivor, both from 1985. Mm-hmm. Apparently 1985 was the year that a lot of people that were friends that didn't realize they were in love with each other fell in love.
Listen, any good rom-com starts out with two people being friends and then realizing that either they're both in love with each other or one of them is in love with the other.
Yes. And so is it a coincidence that all the rom-coms started happening after 1985?
I don't know. So I got to know, though, how many songs have the word or in them? And I'm not talking about and or.
You're not talking about Benjamin Orr from the Cars.
I'm talking about Oars to My Boat.
Yes.
I feel like that's probably not many songs.
I mean, you got to bring the ship into the shore and throw away the oars forever.
Yes, yes.
Because Kevin Cronin just couldn't fight that feeling anymore.
I get it.
So what does this song remind you of? Or what do you love about this song? Or any personal memories?
I want to get out my lighter and wave it in the air when I hear this song. Like, and to me, a cell phone doesn't do the same thing.
So, you know, there. It's funny because this song takes me back to 1985, of course. REO Speedwagon was my first concert that I ever went to.
Oh, wow.
So I heard this, you know, in concert multiple times. Kevin Cronin always says the same thing after playing the song. All right, enough of the mushy crap. Now let's rock.
I like the mushy crap.
Yeah, I think most people do from REO. So, but they can kind of rock out a little bit. But I think when most people think of REO, they think of the power ballads.
Yeah, for sure.
One Lonely Night, Can't Fight This Feeling, Here With Me, that kind of thing. I remember, so there was a television show in the mid-2000s called Supernatural. With the two brothers, and they liked to listen to rock music and drive muscle cars. But I remember the one brother going into a bar where this girl that liked him, he was there, and she puts on the jukebox, Can't Fight This Feeling.
Oh, wow.
And he says, REO, no way, because he kind of liked Asia and AC/DC and stuff like that. And she goes, REO all the way. Kevin Cronin sings it from the heart. And the guy goes, he sings it from the hair. So that reminds me of that. Okay, so we are now down to our top three.
We're moving right along.
We are moving right along. Are you ready for your number three song?
Oh, I'm ready.
We got to go back to the early 80s for this one, folks.
That is Open Arms by Journey. It debuted in the top 40 on January 23rd, 1982. It was on the chart for 14 weeks, where it peaked at number two on the Billboard Hot 100 for 6 weeks.
It's a long time to hold the top on the number two spot.
First 3 weeks was held off by Centerfold, Jay Giles' band. The next 3 weeks, it was held off by I Love Rock and Roll by Joan Jett.
So those are pretty good songs that held it off.
It was the number 34 song of the year in 1982. I have listened to the songs of 1982, and I highly doubt that there is one that comes anywhere close to Open Arms.
We need to go back and look at I Love Rock and Roll was the number one song of 1982, I believe.
And that's a good song, but I mean, Open Arms. So I listened to a ton of Chicago, a ton of Journey in the early to mid 90s when I was just a wee teen. And I had one of my best friends was a guy and he was a musician and we would get together just for fun and we would sing Open Arms. And unfortunately, he passed away a couple of years ago, but he is who I think of every time I hear Open Arms. And, you know, kind of makes me a little sad, even though I still think it's a fantastic song.
So I think Journey, when I hear power ballads, I think of Journey, right? I think of Steve Perry. He's on the road. He's missing whatever love in his life he has at that time, right?
Yes.
Whether it's Faithfully, whether it's Open Arms, whatever. So 1982 sounds about right for Journey and Steve Perry and his little tiny leather jacket that he can hardly fit into.
So Steve Perry blows my mind. Everything about Steve Perry blows my mind. His voice.
Yes.
His odd little looks.
Yes, his bangs.
His love for the woman in his life.
Probably Sherry, right?
The relationship he's had with the other band members. I wish I could just sit down for like half an hour and just talk to him about some things. But I always go back to the documentary that we watched.
On We Are the World.
And you could see Steve Perry working in the background, really pulling this thing together and taking no credit for it.
Well, the part that I thought was funny was Huey Lewis was having trouble hitting his high part.
Yeah.
And Steve Perry's like, okay, so just try it like this. He's like, oh, it's like, no, Steve.
Yeah.
That's like me going, hey, I can't hit this 97 mile an hour fastball. And Ted Williams going, oh, just try this here.
Right.
So I was wrong about I Love Rock and Roll being the number one song in 1982. It was actually the number three song of 1982. The top two songs in 1982, you have established in the past that you hate both of these songs. One of them, you established that today. Number two was Eye of the Tiger by Survivor. And number one was Physical by Olivia Newton-John.
I'm telling you, 82, the early 80s had some horrible songs.
So number four was Ebony and Ivory, which is a song that I hate. Number five was Centerfold. So
okay.
Open Arms was held off by the number three and number five song of the year for number one. So that's why it didn't get on there. Don't You Want Me by Human League was six. Jack and Diane and Hurt So Good were seven and eight. John Cougar Mellencamp coming back to back there in the top 10. Abracadabra by Steve Miller was nine. And Hard to Say I'm Sorry was number 10 by Chicago.
Okay.
You've got to go way down. Now, there's some awful songs that are ahead of Open Arms.
I don't get
for that year.
Open Arms it's a great love song.
But yeah, it is. And Steve Perry's just got a wonderful, amazing voice. And I don't think anybody can replicate him. Not even the Filipino guy who sings phonetically.
Georgia!
So I always wanted to see Journey, Foreigner, and REO in concert together.
Okay. So, well, you and I have seen Journey. You wanted them to be all in the same concert?
The same one, yeah. I've seen all three of those groups. I've seen Journey, Foreigner, and REO. Now, Foreigner did not have Lou Gramm. It had their, you know, the other lead singer, who's fine. I like him. He actually seems to have more personality than Lou Gramm. But you know what he doesn't have of Lou Gramm?
What?
The pipes.
Yeah, right.
All right. So, your number three was Open Arms by Journey. All I'm going to say is my number three is I would like to be the air for you when you breathe. Or if you ever get drunk, creepy. I want to be the wine. That is I'll Be There For You by Bon Jovi. It debuted in the top 40 on March 18th, 1989. It was on the chart for 13 weeks. It peaked at number one on the Billboard Hot 100, as well as on the airplay and sales charts. It was the number 23 song of the year in 1989. Now, this is off their album, New Jersey, We know that Slippery When Wet was their big, huge breakout album. And that was 87. And then New Jersey came out in late 88. And while that wasn't that long, as a kid, boy, it seemed like it had been years. Because I think actually Slippery When Wet came out in 86, but really? A lot of the stuff was 87.
Yeah.
It seemed like it had been years since Bon Jovi had released something. And so I wondered, is this going to be as good? There's no way this is going to be as good as Slippery right. When Wet. And then they come out with Bad Medicine. And then they come out with this, which is probably their best power ballad. Now, they had some great power ballads on Slippery When Wet, but I'll Be There For You. Now, you want to talk about some poetry. John Bon Jovi is a poet.
Well, okay, so these lyrics are ridiculous.
They are ridiculous.
But I will say, it just works.
Yeah.
It just works. Now, I don't think you could sing this. I don't think I could sing this.
I definitely couldn't sing it. You hear that voice?
John Bon Jovi can sing this, and you believe every word he's saying.
Absolutely. So I've seen Bon Jovi in concert twice. One time, I believe, was on Valentine's Day, ironically enough.
Really?
They sang the song. This was the song that Bon Jovi decided to leave the stage and take a break for about 10, 15 minutes.
So they did a lot of O-O-O's.
So they let Richie Sambora sing the song. John Bon Jovi did not sing the song. Wow. Richie Sambora sang the song. And then, yes, they did about 7.5 minutes of And at the end, it was kind of like, okay, Donnie, let's get it over with. We're not going to bring this back one more time. Like, let's get the star of the show back out there.
And when he says Donnie, he's referring to Donnie Wahlberg.
Yeah, because he was going to bring everything back one more time, and he did it 37 times. But after watching Bon Jovi in that concert, so that was around 2004-ish. So he was in his 40s, but as much as he moved and danced around, like, he needed that 10 to 15 minute break.
You know it.
Like, but he was still just like flying around the stage like he was a young man. It was kind of crazy. But yeah, I think of this song, it's late 80s.
Yeah.
It's late 80s.
It is.
And you were wondering if I was going to have a Bon Jovi song
and
on there.
And there it is.
And there you go.
And to me,
I did not disappoint.
There is no better power ballad.
Then I'll Be There For You?
Yep.
Oh, wow. But you didn't pick it.
No, but I knew you would.
You didn't know.
I did too.
Nothing.
I did too. I know you.
All right. We ready to move on to your number two?
I tried not to hurt you, no, I tried, but I guess that's why they say every rose has its thorn. Just like every night has its dawn. Just like every cowboy sings a sad, sad song. Every rose has its thorn.
Yeah, it does.
I was waiting for that. Every Rose Has Its Thorn by Poison. Debuted in the top 40 on November 12th, 1988. It was on the chart for 14 weeks. It peaked at number one on the Billboard Hot 100 for 3 weeks. It was number one on airplay and sales for 3 weeks as well. And it was the number three song of the year in 1988.
Ooh, number three.
Listen to this,
That's
though.
That's huge.
It is the 261 on the all-time chart.
Is that right?
261. So somebody says there's almost 300 songs better than Every Rose Has Its Thorn.
So it peaked November 12th, 1988. So that number three song of the year was actually for 1989, not 1988.
Oh, sorry.
That was my bad.
I should have clarified that a little bit there. Sorry. Yeah. But Little Lynn, so 1988 was right around the time that I got my first little boombox. And then I started having the ability to pick what radio station I wanted to listen to on the radio when I was on my own. And of course, it was Power 99, and they were playing the top hits. And Every Rose Has Its Thorn came on, and I was like, what is this? Do you remember hearing a song as a little kid for the first time and just being like in awe?
Oh,
of
yeah,
it?
Absolutely. Yeah, absolutely.
Just in awe.
So I love this because it starts out with just him and the acoustic guitar just playing. And then the band, after the first chorus, the band joins in with the rest of the instruments and really rocks it out there. Do you want to know what the two songs that finished above it in 1989 are?
Yeah, I feel like I'll disagree with whatever they are, but let me hear it.
Number two is My Prerogative by Bobby Brown.
Absolutely disagree.
And number one is Look Away by Chicago.
Oh, that's my all-time favorite song.
So you would agree with that?
Yes.
So Every Rose Has Its Thorn was on their second album. So I had their first, I had both albums, but I had their first song, first album, Look What the Cat Dragged In, and just wore the tar out of that tape in 1987. Talk Dirty to Me, Look What the Cat Dragged In, others that I can't think of right now. I don't know why.
50 now.
My brain is going blank. But then they came out with Open Up and Say Ah, which had Nothing But a Good Time, and then Every Rose Has Its Thorn. And we loved the power ballad, I Won't Forget You, which was on Look What the Cat Dragged In, but nothing like Every Rose Has Its Thorn. And that's when you started going, okay, maybe their second album, much like Bon Jovi's second album, even though New Jersey was not Bon Jovi's second album, but it was after their big breakout. It was like, okay, so maybe the second album is not only going to hold up to the first album, it may surpass it. And that's kind of how what we felt about Every Rose Has Its Thorn. I like the opening.
I know. I love it. And of course, we can't pass on to the next song until I point out this is, I got trouble for singing the song in church.
Yes, you did. I've heard that story several times, and you still to this day disagree with your mom about it.
Yes, absolutely.
That's too funny. All right. So Every Rose Has Its Thorn is fantastic. That's your number two song. I'm going to go ahead and go with my number two song, which I believe, and most people may not agree, but I believe is just as good. That is The Flame by Cheap Trick. It debuted about 6 months before Every Rose Has Its Thorn. May 21st, 1988. It was on the chart for 14 weeks. It peaked at number one on the Billboard Hot 100 for 2 weeks. It was also number one on airplay and sales for 2 weeks as well, and hit number one in Australia and Canada. It is the number 14 song of the year in 1988. Now, do you believe that there were 13 better songs in 1988 than The Flame?
It's hard to believe, but it's also hard to believe the length of Cheap Trick's career.
Cheap Trick obviously started in the mid to late 70s. They were kind of a power punk type group. The songwriters, this was their first number one song. The songwriters, Bob Mitchell and Nick Graham, brought two songs to Cheap Trick and said, we have two number one hits here. One's meant for you and one's meant for Chicago, and we're going to give you your choice of song. And it was The Flame and it was Look Away.
Oh!
And Cheap Trick chose The Flame, but they absolutely hated it.
They hated the song.
They hated the song. Ricky Nielsen supposedly like threw down his guitar or threw the tape recorder across the room when he heard it. He absolutely hated it. This is not their style. I have been to see Cheap Trick in concert 3 or 4 times. They've only played it once or twice. They don't always play it at the concert. Now,
that's too bad.
The first concert that I ever went to, REO Speedwagon, Cheap Trick opened up for them and they did play this song, which I was happy about. But I've been to see them here in Atlanta at the Roxy, and they did not play The Flame. They still love their punk stuff. I think they realized that The Flame gave them their only number one hit, but they were not fans of this song at all.
So when you say Cheap Trick, I instantly go to I Want You to Want Me,
yes,
which was, I think, late 70s.
Yes, so. That was a top 20 hit, I believe. I think that was their only other number 10, top 10 hit before The Flame.
Yeah.
So I've actually met Ricky Nielsen. I've met him backstage at that concert at the Roxy.
When I went there.
Yeah, I went backstage and talked to him. Yeah.
How did you do that?
The people that I went with, they worked with at the same company as his son.
Oh,
and
wow.
So, although his son wasn't there,
Yeah. You
know, he just came out after the concert and was like, people from this company, come on back. So we went back and just got to talk to him, shake his hand, you know, that kind of thing.
You and I have been together for 125 years, and that's the first time I've ever heard that.
You know, I can't tell you all my stories. Like, then we'll get bored. What are we going to talk about when we get older? So, as I mentioned, this was the number 14 song of the year in 1988. Number 13 absolutely should not have been above it. Anything For You by Gloria Estefan.
Ew.
And I'm going to say Anything. Ew. By Gloria Estefan should never be in the top 100.
Yeah, unfortunately, I think I agree with you.
Number 12 is Wishing Well by Terrence Trent D'Arby.
Oh, Emmy loves it.
Number 11 was One More Try by George Michael, a good song, but not better than The Flame. 10 was Roll With It, Steve Winwood.
Okay. That's a good one.
Hands to Heaven by Breathe was number 9. That's another good one. That could have been a power ballad on our list today. Could Have Been by Tiffany. Heaven Is a Place on Earth by Belinda Carlisle. So Emotional, Whitney Houston is number 6. Sweet Child of Mine, number 5. Never Gonna Give You Up, Rick Astley, number 4. Got My Mind Set on You, George Harrison, 3. Need You Tonight, INXS, number 2. And the number 1 song in 1988 was Faith by George Michael. So George Michael had 2 in the top 11. But yeah, love this song. This was the song the summer before my freshman year. So there was this and When It's Love by Van Halen that just remind me of that summer. All right. You got anything else to say about Cheap Trick or The Flame?
I am ready for mine.
You are ready for your number 1. I think it's a good one.
I don't need to be the king of the world. As long as I'm the hero of this little girl.
Heaven by Warren.
Great song.
Debuted. Ooh, shut off a little hard there, didn't it? We had a hard stop. Debuted in the top 40 on August 5th, 1989. It was on the chart for 14 weeks. It peaked at number 2 on the Billboard Hot 100 for 2 weeks. It was held off by Girl, I'm Gonna Miss You, Milli Vanilli.
I think we should strip that number 1 away from Milli Vanilli and give it to Heaven. Of all the number 2 songs that never hit number 1 during the 1980s, this one's probably the biggest crime.
Okay, so listen to this. It was number 1 on the sales chart and number 2 on the airplay chart. It was number 3 on the mainstream rock chart. It was the 15th song of the year in 1989. I mean,
we're hanging around the teens tonight,
there
aren't we?
14 better? I don't know.
Oh my gosh. Another Gloria Estefan song right above it. Don't Want to Lose You. I mean, I don't know what was going on in the late 80s.
She was big in the late 80s.
I don't care. Her music sucks.
Well, unfortunately, yes. But I'm not going to rehash stories I've told 100 times. But I loved Heaven specifically. Not really Warrant. I just loved the song Heaven. And one of the first songs that I really honed in on when I was just getting into listening to the radio and would just sit and wait for the DJ to play it so I could record it on my little boombox.
Yeah, it was a fantastic song. Another song that was on a lot during the summer, specifically the end of the summer between my freshman and sophomore year. So a year later. Yeah, just I love this song. This song reminds me of like going to the water park. The Labor Day weekend right before school started, we'd go to the water park on vacation and that kind of thing. And this song just, it was almost like it played in a loop.
Yep.
I think the song in Georgia Satellites, you know, he had a little change in his pocket going jingling-a-ling. All right. You got anything else to say about Heaven and Warrant?
I mean, it's fantastic.
It's a fantastic power ballad. And I don't think they thought it was going to be that big of a hit. I think they recorded it with just kind of bad production, and then radio stations started playing it, became a hit, or at least an airplay hit, and then they made them go back in and re-record it with better production.
Really?
And that's what we have here. Yep.
I'm really kind of wondering what in the world could be better than the last few songs that we've already talked about.
I know, but I'm telling you, this next one that I'm playing,
okay,
I think it's the best power ballad maybe of all time.
Oh, no. Nope. Maybe it's the way you smile. Come on undone. Ooh, babe. Lost in love is what I feel. And I'm with you. Baby, baby. Why do you choose when I'm with you?
Now that is When I'm With You by Sheriff.
Okay, so when you first started playing this song, you had this little lovey-dovey look in your eyes and you were looking across your computer at me and I was like, oh.
Yeah.
And then you closed your eyes and you started grooving out and I realized the lovey-dovey look was your love for this song.
No. The lovey-dovey look was for you. So that's When I'm With You by Sheriff. It debuted in the top 40 on December 17th, 1988. It was on the chart for 13 weeks. It peaked at number one on the Billboard Hot 100. It was number one on airplay, sales, and the Adult Contemporary chart. But here's the thing. This is not a 1988 song. This song was released in 1983.
Whoa.
But only got up to number 60. One.
Yeah, I think that 1983 wasn't ready for this.
So it's the number 37 song of the year in 1989. I have a hard time believing that there are 36 songs better than that. But here are some fun facts that I pulled for this song. Okay. The Guinness World Record lists When I'm With You as having the longest held vocal note in a U.S. hit single, which features a note timed at 19.3 seconds, which we heard underneath there at the very end.
How's that possible?
19.3 seconds on that high note. So it was, I mentioned it was originally released in 83 on their third, it was the third single off their debut album. So, and it reached number eight on the RPM chart in Canada, which is where they're from. And it was their biggest hit there, but it entered, it only got up to 61, as I mentioned, on the U.S. Billboard Hot 100 in May of 1983. And because of that, they were disappointed and frustrated by their lack of international success. The band Sheriff broke up. So they were broke up when this song hit big.
Oh, wow.
In the 80s, or in the late 80s. Now, why did it hit big? In November of 1988, Brian Phillips, program director at KDWB in Minneapolis, St. Paul, shout out to our friends from Pop Culture Yearbook, began to play the song, and eventually other radio stations nationally followed suit. And this encouraged Capitol Records to re-release the song as a single. And the song re-entered the Billboard Hot 100 on November 26, 1988. And on February 4th, 1989, the song reached number one in the United States, making Sheriff the first Canadian band to do so since Bachman Turner Overdrive reached number one in November of 1974 with You Ain't Seen Nothing Yet.
Wow.
That's hard to believe that a Canadian band didn't hit number one in the U.S. from 74 to 89.
That's insane.
15 years, Canadian group did not have, right? A hit. But let's talk about this song for a minute before I get into what happened to the band. That's poetry.
That's a good song.
I get chills when I'm with you.
Yep.
My world stands still when I'm with you. What do you think about the song?
It is like a poem with a really great melody.
It was big in 1983 and then big again in 1989.
It fits better in 1989.
It does. But to me, this is like the greatest power ballad of all time.
It's a really, really good song. It's a
great love song, great power ballad.
It's crazy to me that this is kind of all that we hear from them, isn't it?
It is. So here's why. 83, like I said, is when they released it, but they broke up. two of their members had formed a duo named Frozen Ghost by the time the song hit it big, and they declined to reform the group. So Sheriff's lead vocalist, Freddie Kiersey, and guitarist Steve DeMarchi, who had both been working as couriers at the time, subsequently formed the band Alias and charted the following year with the number two hit, More Than Words Can Say. Do you recognize that song?
Well, yeah, I think I do. Is that the More Than Words Can Say that I know?
It's not More Than Words by Extreme.
Okay, then what is it?
Here you go.
I need you now.
Right.
Yeah, this is good.
So you hear the same lead singer doing I Need You Now that did When I'm With You.
Yep.
So it's amazing to me that they had no success. They broke up. They were frustrated. And then this gets re-released. When I'm With You gets re-released in 88. And 89 is a huge hit. And so he goes and forms another band and then nails another power ballad.
Crazy.
All from Canada, which reached number two. And I Need You Now is a fantastic, More Than Words Can Say. I always called it I Need You Now, even though it's More Than Words Can Say, right?
Right.
So whenever I hear More Than Words Can Say or read it, I'm like, what is that song again? What is that song again?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. If they called it I Need You Now, I would get it right away. But yeah, fantastic. Just two fantastic power ballads
really,
there at the end.
Really, was Frozen Ghost, were they off doing so much that they just...
Some people make decisions that they think are good in the time, and in hindsight, it turns out to be bad. They should have just reformed Sheriff. They'd have had that hit. They could have toured, and then they could have wrote More Than Words Can Say and probably toured off that as well.
I mean, yeah, who knows what they could have gone on and done.
All right. Well, that is all that I have. Do you have anything else?
Give me some stats. I think I need some stats to wrap this.
You want some stats?
Give it to me.
Nerd alert.
All right. Here's your nerd alert stats. We had 8 number ones and 2 number twos on the list. The 8 number ones spent 15 weeks at the top of the charts. In our top 7, we had were represented by the years 1982, 1984, 3 songs in 85, a song in 86, 6 songs in 88, 2 in 89, and 1 in
8010. Wow.
Our honorable mention had 83, 2 in 84, 86, 87, 88, and 89. We did not have anything from 1980 or 1981, but as I've mentioned several times before, my good buddy Alan Hunter always calls the early 80s the good, the bad, and the ugly, so you never know what you're going to get.
That's right.
There.
I agree with him on that.
All right. Well,
so, and I believe you've put this playlist together and it can be found on our Spotify account.
It certainly can. This playlist will be on our Spotify account and we will even include the honorable mentions.
So I've got some housework to do and I'm planning on listening to that playlist this afternoon. And
that's going to be fun. I think you'll enjoy hearing the full songs on that.
I think so. I'm excited.
It's a good Valentine's Day playlist for those of you that love 80s power ballads.
If you love love.
If you love love, then listen to not just this show, but those songs after the show.
Yeah, absolutely.
If you hate love, then what are you doing here?
We can't help you.
All right. So if you liked what you heard, go ahead and hit that subscribe button so you're guaranteed to never miss a show. Please also give us a 5-star rating and review if you have not done that already.
And phone a friend.
Phone a friend. Tell somebody. You can reach us on email, Twitter, Facebook, Threads, childrenof_80s. Or you can reach us by email if that's how you want to do it. childrenofthe1980s@gmail.com.
We will pick back up next week with the continuation of our 80s TV theme song marathon.
Yes, we are doing the sitcoms bracket with our buddies Brad, Pete, and Giff from the Pop Culture Yearbook. Tune in. That one's going to be fun. We're running those polls. We're running that first round of polls on X right now. So there's been some controversy.
Oh, I know.
Controversy.
I've heard you have been angry.
These people are insane. Hey, it is what it is. That's why we all have different opinions. We all had the same opinions. This would be a boring world.
It really would be.
So I love the feedback that I'm getting on Twitter from this tournament that we're holding here.
Okay. Well, until next time.
I'm Jim.
And I'm Lindsay.
And we are
Children of the 80s.
Did we do our spiel at the beginning? I don't feel like we did.